So I'd like to spend just a little time on this notion of putting oneself at risk. And last night when we made the decision, which was not actually a decision we made last night, it was a decision that we had made earlier, that if, God forbid, missiles started visiting themselves on the counterpoint cities, and we had the wherewithal to do it in a safe way, and the wherewithal to do it in a way that wouldn't compromise you or the campers, that we would try to, you know, move you out of the cities and out of range of those missiles, simply because we think that that's our responsibilities to you, and quite honestly, that's our responsibilities to your parents. I've been in contact with your parents through email. One of your parents, actually, I had the privilege of talking to yesterday. Some of your parents have emailed me separately. I've encouraged them. I'm not looking at which person. So some of them, your parents have emailed me separately, asking me some questions. But the bottom line is, it's their prerogative. I'm happy they're doing it. They're concerned about you, as they should be. And I think they're happy in the way we've dealt with the situation. But what about putting yourself at risk? What about doing that? Can you put yourself at risk? So while we're enjoying ourselves over here, and while we're having, hopefully you had some downtime today, there's a whole bunch of people your age who've gotten their tzav shmona, who are supposed to be running summer programs or anything of that nature, and today got called up back to the Army, or people who were on leave or got called back up to the Army. And obviously, they put themselves in harm's way, not only to protect the Jews and the citizens of Israel, but I believe to protect Jews all around the world. What is this about putting ourselves at risk to save someone else or to help someone else? What does halakha say about that? And that's a machloket, that's an argument that's found within the Gemara. If you look at sources 1 and 2, you guys into doing this? Do you want to do this? Do you want to learn a little bit? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay. So if we look at sources 1 and 2, everyone have sources?
Yeah.
Okay. I just need... Thank you. So if we look at sources 1 and 2, we see an interesting statement. Source number 1 says, how do we know if somebody's friend is drowning in the Nahar, in the river, or is being attacked by an animal, or is being attacked by robbers, that you should try to save them? It's a machloket in the Gemara with Pasuk. The first approach in the Gemara is the source number one. What's the source for the need to help save someone? Lo tamora daria. You shouldn't stand idly by while your friend's blood is being spilled. The Yerushalmi, source number 2, actually has a story where Rav Imi was taken as a captive, and Rav Yochanan says, Rav Imi became captive, let's prepare the burial shrouds. In other words, there's no chance that he's going to live. Rabbi Shimon ben Shlakish says, can someone read the Yerushalmi, or the last word of the Yerushalmi? What does Rabbi Shimon ben Shlakish say? Yes? What does that mean? Right. If they want to kill him, though, they're going to have to come through me, basically. I'm not going to let him die, and if they're going to try to kill him, they're going to have to come through me. Is there any difference between the Babylonian Talmud, the Bavli, and the Yerushalmi? Is there any difference between the two? Then, yes? What do you think? Yes? Anyone? Yes?
According to the Yerushalmi, you have to put your on the line, that's the most thing that you get.
According to the Yerushalmi? According to what? The Bavli doesn't seem to indicate that you have to put your life at risk. It says, it doesn't seem to indicate in the same language that you must put yourself at risk. It means that if somebody's drowning and you can save the person, you can do that. If somebody's being attacked by robbers and you have the wherewithal to save them, you can do that. but not, it doesn't say, the language doesn't indicate that you must put yourself at risk. Whereas source number two, Reb Shlakish is saying, they're going to have to kill me before they kill him. You have to put yourself at risk if someone else's life is at risk. And the Shulchan Aruch writes in source number three the following. Let's look at source number three inside. Someone sees one's friend drowning in the sea. Oh, listen, b'yim alav, a robber's coming upon them. Oh, chayar ra'aba alav, the yachol lahatzila, and he has the ability to save him. Who, by himself, batzmo, oh, she yiskor acherim lahatzil, or he can hire others. He can't swim, but he can hire someone else who knows how to swim to save a person who's drowning. But lo hatzil, he doesn't. Oh, sheshama ovei b'chadam, oh, mosu mashim lo ra'ah, oh, tomin, or he hears that people are having secret conversations in which they're going to attack him, and he can do something about it. Look at the last words of source number three. Elu over alotam alodam riyacha. In these cases, he's over alotam alodam riyacha. Now, in source number four, we actually see a commentary that writes the following. We actually can see it better in source number six, the Kesef Mishnah. Who's the Kesef Mishnah? Does anyone know? Who's the Kesef Mishnah? It's a commentary in the Rambam. Who's the Kesef Mishnah? Rabbi Yosef Karo. Look at the Kesef Mishnah. What does the Kesef Mishnah point out about the difference between the Yerushalmi and the Baal? Look at source number six yourself. What does the Kesef Mishnah say? It's the middle of the last complete line in source number six, in the middle. The Kasa Hagos Maimon. That's the part. What's it in the Baal and Yashami, the Babylonian Jerusalem Talmud? Someone else? You've already answered. What's the difference? Yes? Sorry? That the Jerusalem Talmud says if someone else is going to die and you can save them, you have to risk your life. The Babylonian Talmud, the Talmud Bavli, says if someone else is about to die, you have to try to save them. But if you're going to put your life at risk, then you don't have to do that. In fact, the Aruch HaShulchan, one of the commentary books, and the codifier also of the Code of Yeshua, highlights this in source number 7. Let's look at source number 7. HaPoskim HeViyu B'Shem Yerushalmi. Translate. HaPoskim HeViyu B'Shem Yerushalmi. Come on, let's put that YU education to work. HaPoskim HeViyu B'Shem Yerushalmi. No, someone? Paskin, the host of the English army. The Chayim Adam Ahachdis and Asma was suffering in Sakana, Gidei Lahatzil Chaveira. What does that mean? Someone has to put themselves in danger in order to save their friend. But the Rishonim, he shmiduz that. But the Rishonim have removed this, or have not included this, in their suffering of these laws. Why? Read the next words of the Aruch HaShulchan. Read the next words of the Aruch HaShulchan. No, someone? Aloud, please. Because our Shas, namely the Babylonian Talmud, says you don't have to put yourself in this. Umihu hakol afiha inyan. But the bottom line is, don't be so strict, according to the Babylonian Talmud, according to the Talmud Bavli, and never put yourself at any risk. You have to weigh the issue, and don't be so concerned about yourself that you don't put yourself in any type of danger. And he quotes a pasuk, and then he says, whoever saves one Jew, or one person in the world, is exactly saved the whole world. So the argument is that Babylonian Jerusalem Talmud or putting yourself at risk is, according to the Babylonian Talmud, don't put yourself at risk to save someone else. According to Jerusalem Talmud, you must put yourself at risk. And there is an ongoing conversation about how much we follow the Babylonian Talmud, the Talmud Bavli, versus the Talmud Yerushalmi. What can be the differences between these two approaches? Can you think of any practical situations that there's a difference, or any issues based on these statements of the Babylonian of the Bavli and Yerushalmi? Can you think of any differences? Anything. Any situations. Yes.
Army.
Very good. Can you go to the army? Can you help the army? The army actually has to be, it's a correct example, although the army is different, and we'll see why a little bit later. Yes?
Just a question. I think it's so important to point at that point. Even the Bible, if you see someone drowning or see someone being attached by bandits or an animal facing you, just by going in there and saving you up, you're right on this.
You're right. If you have a submachine gun and it's too cool, and you're not putting yourself that much at risk. And if you go in there and you have no way of doing it, or you don't know how to swim, and you're going to save somebody, then you're putting yourself at great risk, because there's a good chance that you'll drown also. The Babylonian Talmud says you don't need to put yourself at that type of risk. The Jerusalem Talmud says you even have to try to put yourself at that type of risk. So that's the difference between them. Practical situation, the difference, yes. Army was mentioned, yes. What else?
I don't even practical, but it just seems that it can't be like based on how much danger other persons are experiencing.
It seems that the Babylonian Jerusalem Talmud don't seem that that's not the issue. Organ donation. Can I donate organ donations? Do I have an obligation to donate, let's say, a kidney to help save somebody else? Or donate part of a liver to help save somebody else? What would you think, based on what we just read?
Or it's telling your child, yes.
You must do it.
The Bobby,
it's optional. At best, it's optional. Okay? Yes.
Why do you say you have to do it?
He said, getting a kidney, there's a chance that there won't be an issue. We can live with one kidney, but there's a chance that obviously something will happen to that kidney, the only remaining kidney that you have. Yerushalmi would say, you have to donate a kidney. You have to donate a piece of your liver. The Bavli would say, if you want to, you can, but there's no obligation. It's a mitas chasidus, maybe. It's an act of piety. It's not a halakhic obligation. There's no mitzvah of lo tamo lo tamriyata, not to donate a liver. Reliable. That would be an interesting difference between the Bavli and Yerushalmi. Right? Yes?
The Machlokes is whether or not Hayach HaKohen would trump the Tanna, or Machlokes is whether or not you can enter into the service. Meaning, can you put yourself in that risk, or is Machlokes, must you put yourself in that risk?
I think the Machlokes is, must you put yourself in that risk? Hayach, right, must you put yourself in that risk? I think that's what the Rav Shulchan is saying. The Rav Shulchan is saying that the Bavli and Yerushalmi says you must put yourself at risk. Yes.
I'm sorry, just to clarify, the Bavli is saying it's optional, or it's saying that if you're going to put yourself at risk to die, that you shouldn't?
I think the Bavli, there are different commentators with the Bavli differently. I would say the Bavli says it's at best optional. You definitely don't have to put yourself at risk.
But even optional is more than
right.
Necessary. Meaning, I'm saying.
So we'll get to that. You see, the Rav Moshe Feinstein will make that comment.
It's actually added in this way, but on the top, it's an actively looking for papers to donate kidneys.
Right.
So we have to donate to someone's church, your sister needs, or your brother, or someone's family. Would you actively go on, like the Master Chesed said, and turn to the Amutah and say, I'm here, give my kidney to anyone?
So the Bavli would say you don't have to do that. The Yerushalmi would say you should do that. Yes.
I'm not sure how it's optional. It says Chayav Hatzilah, that means you have to do it.
Where is that?
The first one.
Yeah, except, you're right, except the commentators that we all read into that Gemara as only when there's limited to you. That's why we read the Kesef Mishnah and the Arach HaShulchan. And there's others also that say you don't have to put yourself at risk. Even if you're a lifeguard and you go to save somebody, you put yourself at some risk, right? But the bottom line is, it's a pretty good chance you're going to be okay. But what the Yerushalmi would say is, even if you're not trained to be a lifeguard, you just can swim, you don't have to put yourself at risk.
Just from a strict reading of the Talmud Bavli, it seems to be mandatory.
From a strict reading of the Talmud Bavli, without the way all the Rishonim read it, yes. But all the Rishonim are consistent. They all read it in the way I just mentioned it. You're not, there's my focus, the language of the Yerushalmi of putting yourself at risk is much stronger than what the Bavli is saying. Okay? Okay. I'm sorry? Okay. So there's some interesting stories here that are interesting about the Bavli and Yerushalmi, who's normally in Paskin in a very strict way, like the Bavli. And Rav Schechter brings down a story of Rav Chaim, who was rabbi in Brisk. Rav Chaim speaks about a case, right, as a rabbi of Brisk. Look at source number 8 and tell me if you can read the story of what happens there. Should we read the source number 8 and see if you can tell me? Does anyone know what the word holy rab means, by the way?
Cholera.
By the way, parenthetically, holy rab, cholera, according to some people, actually, cholera got its name from the Hebrew, holy rab. It's just an interesting thing. Okay? Yes?
Saying that even though it's very contagious disease, whatever you had, you were obligated to go out into the streets and help those who were fainted, even though you're putting yourself at risk.
So Rav Chaim was a rabbi in Brisk. He was known for helping people who had challenging situations. In fact, one of the famous stories about Rav Chaim, it's a true story, is that any time a child was born out of wedlock, an illegitimate child, and the family was uncomfortable about taking care of the baby, they would park the baby at the doorstep of Rav Chaim, and Rav Chaim would make sure that child was taken care of. Rav Chaim was extremely known for his acts of chesed. In fact, that's why when Rav Chaim was buried, he requested that his matseva, that his tombstone, focus not on his great learning, but rather that he was a rabbi of Brisk and the chesed that he would do in Brisk. For example, in many different articles, like in Ish Halacha, something speaks about Rav Chaim and his acts of loving kindness. So there's a situation in Brisk of cholera, which is very infectious, and there's a concern, very contagious, that there's a concern that people are going to put them, that people could get the disease. And Rav Chaim Hoskins, essentially like the Yerushalmi, that he would send himself and his members of his family and others to help those who were ill, even though there was a chance that one would put oneself at risk and could get the disease. And so here's an example of following the Yerushalmi and really not the Bavli. One would say, hey, listen, I'm putting myself at risk. There's a chance I'm going to get this disease. There's no real medicine to help save me from this disease. I'm not going to try to help these individuals who are deathly ill. Whereas Rav Chaim passing like the Yerushalmi and not like the Bavli. Yeah.
Did you say that the time and just the kind of also Reish Lakish that we're just going to do to us again? And that's not necessarily the Allah and Dina. The time didn't necessarily cost a measure of everyone else, and just did that for himself.
Well, if you read further into the story, you'll see that not only that, but there are other stories.
The first line says, "Shall call us liyakum."
Right. Right. I was looking for that. Right? And there's actually other stories like this also. My point is that you see that the Yushalmi is leaned upon that you should put yourself at some risk, or at great risk, to save somebody, and you know that person has a chance to really, of that person dying, you should put yourself at risk to try to help them and try to save them. Now, this is actually something that Moshe Feinstein writes also. But Moshe Feinstein in source number 9 writes that while normally one does not have to put himself at risk in order not to violate a negative prohibition, like not keeping Shabbat, not putting yourself at risk, you can violate the Shabbat if you have safety concerns, health concerns. When it comes to Lo Tamo Lo Dam Re'acha, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, if you look at source number 9, the last sentences, of Lahatzil Nefesh Chaveiro, Af Shagam Kein Hu Rav Yisr Lav, He had mutter lahachnis atzma v'safet, ha'achar ha'kohanim yotzeo nefesh v'Yisrael. That you will be saving someone from the Jewish people. As the Mintlas Yitzchak actually speaks about the donating of a kidney. Can you donate a kidney? So he writes that even though, and here he's speaking above and beyond the call of duty, that even though the Bavli seems to indicate you don't have to do it, it's permitted for you to donate a kidney, and it's considered a midas lasidus, an act of piety, based on the Yishalmi. Normally you would say, you have no right to donate a kidney. You have no right to put yourself at risk. You have no, even though this person might die, but who gives you the right to put yourself at risk to save somebody? But based on the Yishalmi that says you can put yourself at risk in order to save somebody, the Mechas Yitzchak, as well as you saw from the story of Rav Chaim of Brisk, as well as for Moshe Feinstein, all use that Yerushalmi to emphasize the fact that we shouldn't be so squeamish and in situations in which you are willing to put yourself at risk. I don't think you can say it's a mandate, even though Rav Chaim does say it's a mandate. It seems that you're allowed to put yourself at risk if you know that a person's life is in danger. And that's why in sources 11 and sources 12, Rav Volzner and the Nishmas Avram, a very famous posek on issues of medical issues, speaks about the fact: can a doctor working with a patient that's highly infectious, can a doctor say that they don't want to work with that patient? They're putting themselves in sakana. And both Rav Volzner and the Nishmas Avram write, "Hey, if you agree to be a doctor, if you agree to be a nurse, you're essentially saying that you're going to follow the Yerushalmi. You're essentially saying that you're willing to put yourself at risk to help save somebody else, and that's why you don't have a right to walk away from a patient that's at risk. You have a responsibility to engage in a patient, even if that patient is, you have to be concerned about his disease being, being one that can be infectious, being one that can be, caught by you. You have to protect yourself in any way. You have to gamble properly, dress yourself properly. But you have to realize that the halakha does not allow you to retreat from hospitalization. In these cases, you have to put yourself in danger because that's the halakha responsibility once you sign up for these responsibilities. What about a soldier? A soldier puts himself at risk more than puts himself at risk. And here in the Mitzvah, the final source that was put together answers that. It's the final page. Shame you did go on one page. Mitzvah. Okay? Source 13. The Mitzvah has asked the question, every mitzvah in the Torah, you're told, don't not put yourself at risk in order to perform a mitzvah. But yet we're told to capture the land of Israel, to protect the land of Israel. So how can you put yourself at risk to protect and to capture the land of Israel? What is the Mitzvah's going to answer?
What is the Mitzvah's going to answer? Yes.
Sorry?
That the mitzvah of the war is not held back by prohibition of it or something.
Anyone want to add to that? Does everyone understand the question? Yes. Okay. I think it's simply the fact. Yeah, I think it's not about ase dochalos ase. I think it's about the fact that the whole notion of war and being a protect and not putting yourself at risk is an oxymoron. In other words, the minute there is a mitzvah to go to war in a mechemet reshut, when it comes to defending the land of Israel, a mechemet haganah, defending the land of Israel, or a mechemet mitzvah, or engaging and capturing the land of Israel, then the laws of putting yourself at risk basically get thrown out the window. But that's why, even in the laws of warfare, even when it was about dealing with Amalek, it needed to, there was actually checks and balances in which the Sanhedrin was involved. The Moshe Feinstein has a very long tshuva explaining, even in the notion of Amalek, Sanhedrin had to give the okay of fighting against Amalek, because we put ourselves at risk when we fight any war. But the only war that there's no checks and balances, so to say, is Mechemet Haganah, is a defensive war, which is really the wars that the state of Israel always fights. It's not fighting wars in which it's trying to gain land. It's always fighting wars in order to protect itself. So, essentially, when we speak about a soldier, the Bavli Yerushalmi falls away, because the Bavli Yerushalmi is about normative life. It's about the fact that in life there will be times in which you'll meet people, in which you will, and they'll have trying times, and their life will be in danger, and you'll have the opportunity to try to help them, and you have to try to help them. How much? That's the argument between the Bavli and Yerushalmi. However, when it comes to warfare, as those laws get suspended, the Bavli and Yerushalmi make no sense at that point. It's not about how much risk you put yourself in. War, by definition, is risky. War, by definition, means you take a risk. War, by definition, means you put your life in harm's way. And therefore, the laws of risk don't apply.
I understand that you're saying that you're putting yourselves at risk for the nation, but can you apply that amongst soldiers? Putting yourself, meaning the whole jump on the grid and make the same wall in the
crowd. The answer is yes. I think that once you're in...
But they're in the same sort of situation.
I think that once you're in the environment of warfare, then I think it's an act of terrorism. I'm not saying a lot of the demands they didn't do that. Then the laws of Kushmark and Sanchez basically fall by the wayside. Because the minute you're... It's almost like those laws are suspended. The minute you're putting yourself, that's what the Muslim is trying to say. The minute you're putting yourself in a war situation, the mitzvah of going to war says that you're allowed to defend yourself against external enemies. And in that situation, it means that the laws of Shmartam Satoshekam are suspended. Now, that doesn't mean that you should walk into, you're trained in the army. In the way you walk into any area or any location or any field, you're trained, and obviously you have to take that training seriously. But the bottom line is that once you have followed the training and the protocols, if it means that you put your life at risk, even if it means you put your life at risk to make sure that civilians are not injured, that is 100% within halakha. The machlokes is Bavli and Yerushalmi is not applying in issues of machama. Laws of Bavli and Yerushalmi are speaking about in everyday situations, not in situations of war.
You're saying it's okay, it's the fall by the wayside, so it's okay to do that. Are you saying, I thought that Tommy and Yerushalmi was saying, like, is it like a chiyuv, meaning like, if you see a grenade and there's seven guys around you, and you do have to save those seven people? You're saying it's like a chiyuv, you have, all those people have an obligation to take their life with others, of course, it's about Tommy and Shama. Uh-huh. If you apply that, it's saying that Tom Bobby falls by the wayside.
Well, no, I would say that both Bobby and Shama fall by the wayside. Because
So in that case, there's not one person that's in sakana and everyone else is not in sakana. In that case, everyone's in sakana. Okay? The Bhavi case is talking about someone's incarcerated, he's about to be killed, and you can go save him. So there's one person in danger, one person not. You, who are not in danger, can you go help that person or not? Okay? The case that you gave me is a situation where everyone is in sakana. So then, in the case where everyone's in sakana, are you allowed to jump on that grenade in order to save everybody else? That's a whole different sugya. I think that it is limited to do that. There's a whole bunch of issues known as life code ethics, as well as the laws of milchama to deal with those issues. We're not focusing on that much, but we're focusing on issues of risk in cases that are disrupted.
So if the other person wasn't in sakana, if he saw like the sound of enemy grenades, then you weren't there. Like, would you say that that is a fear? If he saw the grenade go, according to the top of the Shamba, that also falls.
It's
Bada.
Well, everyone is Bada. In all cases, it's Bada. I don't know if the top of the Shamba would mandate the answer. I have to think about it a little bit. If you could do it, obviously, it would be a mitzvah. I'm not sure that the top of the Shamba was speaking about that. Yes.
How does that work with cases where a second person is going into a situation where he's in a position to help save someone from danger? What if that's done, living a life of resistance, which carries a amount of risk, or being mandated to remove yourself from that risk? How do we do that? For example, also we can sign up to the current situation. And there's some educators who like to claim that people shouldn't live in the government realm because it's more dangerous. So it's
I'm not of the opinion that Yudav Sharon is more risky than in the other places. I mean, you spend time in the heights, that can be risky also. A lot more challenges happen when you come to New York than in Yudav Sharon. Glad that we have it together. There's risk in all places, but I think there is levels of risk. Again, I don't think we can deal with all of these issues in their full complement in one city, and I don't want to be burdened. I want to just do a little bit of learning together for a second. Do you want to answer this? I just wanted to, I do think that there are conversations about that, of how much risk you can put yourself in even when you capture land. But I think that's part of the Mithasana about capturing land. But there's a whole literature on all of those issues. Some of it is focused on the Bhavi Nishambi, but there's an additional corpus of information that needs to be, assimilated before you make decisions like that. I'd be more than willing to share with you the Cobra, but we clearly haven't gone through all of it. But I think, when the Safa Rebbe tragically made the comments that he made, which I think was really irresponsible and really tragic that he made that comment. I would suggest that, one could then say that you could take that to giving reason for the Shoah, to say, the 6 million people were killed because they lived in a dangerous area known as Europe. I'm not sure you can read those comments, that could be dangerous. And I think in that case it was made because all of a sudden you started seeing a religious Zionist woman who became a role model even within the Hasidic community. And I think that became too toxic for certain people to see. But even within the Hasidic community, in fairness, they're furious about that comment. I'm furious. I think that's why the Belzer Rebbe's wife specifically went after that comment to make sure it falls to all three families as almost a response. It's tragic. But the bottom line is, I don't think we're totally equipped to handle the question about does that say exactly where you can live and where you can't? Obviously, I think you have to be careful to put yourself in sakana, but I would assume that many places in Yudav Shomron, for the most part, are as safe as living in Yerushalayim or living in Kiryat Gat, Kiryat Malachi, or anywhere else. And you just have to realize that there is, as we try to build our sovereign state, there are challenges that go with it. I have to tell you personally, I've always been a believer that Jews in America have no right to speak about how Israel manages its affairs when it comes to security issues. I still feel that way. I feel a little bit differently when right now I have a son in the Israeli army. Well, actually, I'm not sure where he is right now. And, you know, it takes on a whole new aura of how you do things. When you speak about the whole notion of soldiers putting themselves in sakana, is it halakhically permitted for him to even sign up with the army when it's not what we have to do here? I think it falls on the Mikhalsina approach, and that's the price you pay in order to make sure that we have Medina Israel. And my son felt, and we agreed with him, if he wanted to, and that price should not just be paid by Jews who have a Israeli passport, but that price should be paid by any Jew who feels that he or she should play a role in protecting the state of Israel in a very frontal way. And we supported his, to my parents' chagrin, we supported his willingness to go into tzavah and to go into combat. But I think that these are important questions. And the reason why, again, just a few hours ago, I put together some of these co-wrote, which is not the normal good way of preparing a shiur, only for 3 weeks and you prepare properly, but I think these co-wrote are solid co-wrote, is because I think in some ways we dealt with that last night. How much danger were we going to put yourself, were we going to put you in? Now, like you're saying, you weren't hoping to lose anyone else. It's not like when you staying there that someone else was going to be protected, or someone else was going to, you were going to empower somebody else, or you were going to be able to deflect the missiles or anything else of that nature. So clearly, I don't think any of these laws apply, but if we can make sure that you're in a more safer environment, even though I wouldn't call it, you know, a higher risk environment period down here in Malachi, but if we could put you in a more safer environment, I think we have that responsibility to do it. And I think we also have a responsibility, as you said earlier, and that is not to just wave our hands to the campus of Kiryat Gat here at Malachi and basically say, we tried, you now are stuck under the stairwell for the next day or two, and we're back here in Yerushalayim having a good time at Malcolm Wall, and we'll do a little act of chesed on the side. I think we had to try to make sure that we could re-engage with the children of Kiryat Gat and Kiryat Malachi, the ones that you've already connected with. And that's why, due to the help of Tiva and Gila and Shukri, and finding $8,000 somewhere, we basically changed the next 2 days to you know, if we can't come to the Kiryat Gat and Kiryat Malachi, we're Kiryat Gat and Kiryat Malachi to us. Which is not the first time we've done things like that. We've done that with Family Ward, we've done that in other cases over the past number of years. So we just, you know, took something out of our playbook and decided that we would do things a little bit differently. But I think that these issues of Safek Sakana are important issues, and in light of the fact that you had some glimpse of it last night in your own personal lives, we thought that maybe that it would be appropriate to put some of it in some halakhic context. To see the Machlokas Bavli and Yerushalmi, to realize, although it is pretty clear that the Rishonim define the Bavli as not putting yourself in danger, that there's always that tease to follow the Yerushalmi, and to realize that if you look at the Bavli itself, it doesn't say that you can't put yourself in danger. And that's why you see throughout halakhic history that there are always personalities that try to indicate that we should lean more to the Yerushalmi, and when necessary, put ourselves in some danger and some risk in order to be able to help other people and other Jews. Okay, we'll stop here.